The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Just sickening, heartbreaking on so many levels for Dak Prescott. In moments, the latest on his ankle surgery and the timetable for recovery for Dak. Dan Orlovsky is here. He's going to tell you how Seahawks receiver DK Metcalf has become the best closer in football. Mina Kimes, you see her there. Marcus Spears as well. We begin, though, with Adam Schefter and our top story, the latest on Dak Prescott. What do you know, Adam?
Laura, he underwent surgery last night. I'm told the surgery went, quote unquote, very well and was successful. And he was released from the hospital today. So he will now go home to rehab. And I'm told that this is about a 6-month rehab, but that he should be back 100% for next season without any questions. Now, the big question will be to monitor him in the coming days to see if any infection sets in for that compound fracture of the ankle. Again, they're saying 4 to 6 months. It's probably closer to 6 months, but whether it's 4 or 6 really doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things because he is on track to be ready for next season with his contract set to expire after this season. With Dak gone, obviously, Andy Dalton now takes over as the starting quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys, and his free agent signing from the Cincinnati Bengals now looms larger than ever.
We're going to have more from Adam later on the show, so stay right there, Adam, and more in this conversation. Guys, Dak has endured so much in his 27 years. He's had success, but he lost his mom in 2013, then in April of this year, lost his brother to suicide. He's opened up about his own mental health and struggles with anxiety and depression. Now, this brutal injury. Marcus, now that you've had almost a full day to reflect on what happened to Dak, what are your thoughts?
Still just devastated. Obviously, we know the climate that Dak was in, playing under a franchise tag, but also just seeing a young player that's ascending and continuing to get better and better at the game lose a year, especially in 2020, in a tumultuous season anyway, with all of the things that are going on that are affecting the game. We lose one of our young budding stars. And then yesterday, Laura, I tweeted out, I was like, I would love to talk about the contract, just didn't have the stomach for it. Today I will. This is exactly why I said Dak Prescott should not have signed a franchise tag and should have waited it out with the Cowboys or let them decide to do what they were going to do. We all talk loosely about these type of injuries happening. Oh, what's the probability? You can get hit by a car just walking across the street. It's beside the point. Every time you step on that football field, every football player knows that that possibility of what we saw Dak suffer is a possibility every single snap. And it just brings that to your mind when you see that thing, that transpire with this young career that's ascending as fast as anybody in the league.
Marcus is completely right about this, and I thought it was a reminder that football's not just a brutal game at times, but also a brutal business. Dak Prescott did everything right. He came into this league as a fourth-round draft pick, proved to be the best bargain in football for Dallas for years. He bet on himself twice. And my takeaway from this isn't that he was wrong necessarily to bet on himself, but that it stinks that he was put in the position where he had to bet on himself in the first place because of the system, which is stacked against players like him. The existence of the rookie wage scale and the franchise tag makes it very hard for players like Dak Prescott to get paid based on performance early on. Now, I think he's going to come back. You heard that injury timeline. I think he's going to come back strong, and I think he will get that long-term contract he so desires, but it's such a shame that he wasn't able to get it this season.
Yeah, I mean, when this happened in the moment, it was just so hard to process thoughts. Marcus, you know this, like, as an ex-athlete, it kind of resonates with you. Like, it just, when you see that athlete then on the field, it resonates you because we've all been the 8-year-old that had the dreams of, you know, fulfilling that I'm the quarterback of whatever team or I'm playing pro sports. We've all been the star high school athlete or the high school athlete that worked really hard to get there. We were all the kid in college that was doubted. And then the draft pick that maybe people said wasn't going to be good enough. And so when I think of that moment, I'm like, man, it's not just that injury in that specific time. It's like I see that wave of 10, 12, 15 years for Dak Prescott, and I try to process like how to get people to understand what potentially Dak might have been thinking. And I think there's different players in the NFL. There's guys that love football, and there's guys that love what football brings them. And I think what we saw yesterday was emotion from Dak because he loves football. Like, he absolutely loves being the quarterback of that football team. And, you know, being the quarterback is a very, like, very intimate thing. Like, yes, there was the contract part of it, for sure. But it's also, like, I don't get to walk out there with my teammates on Wednesday for practice. Like, that's my huddle. This is my offense. And that's my Dallas Cowboys Stadium in many ways for Dak Prescott. And I just think he's one of those guys that takes immense pride in that. It's not the money for him. It's not the endorsements. It's that's his team. And that's his group of guys. And we throw around family and brotherhood in sports because they're real. Like, they're very real to us as athletes. And I just think that what we saw from Dak and his teammates yesterday was that wave of emotion of that reality, that wasn't going to be the case moving forward the rest of this season.
And Dan, I think you saw what Dak means to that organization, to that fan base, to everybody across the league with the outpouring of respect, support, and love that was demonstrated last night after his injury. And once we get past that and get to the business side of football, these two sides spent about 2 years trying to work out a long-term deal that they could not figure out. Dak wanted a shorter-term contract. Dallas wanted him on a longer-term contract. Maybe an incident like this shifts a little bit of the leverage to the Dallas Cowboys. Maybe it changes the dynamics of the negotiation, and maybe it makes it such that it's easier to work out a long-term deal. But there's no doubt that there is now the unknown that has been introduced, because we don't know how Andy Dalton's going to play. Andy Dalton's got respect around the league. We don't know how this team is going to respond. What if Andy Dalton plays well, the team thrives? Are they going to tag Dak Prescott at $38 million and be willing to sign him to a long-term deal when Andy Dalton is half the price? There are a lot of questions that now come into play, and we don't know how it's going to play out. One thing that is unarguable is that Dak is an incredible leader, an incredible player, will have great value. But again, we just don't know now how this is going to play out.
Yeah, it's a great point. Hey, one of the things too, Marcus, today, Stephen Jones was asked about Dak, the chance that he might not be with the team. Somebody asked him that. He said, Dak is our future. What else do you want to add?
Yeah, I listen, you guys, Dan, Shefty, you right, and the points are super valid. Man, I ain't trying to hear all that, bro. Like, and it's not to y'all. It's about Stephen Jones and what he's saying. Listen, your franchise quarterback wanted a four-year deal. Figure out how to get it done, if that's your guy. And then we'll revisit as far as extending beyond 4 years. Figure out how to get it done. And yeah, the leadership and the team and all of that stuff. Every single player out there on that field is playing for their livelihood, to take care of their family, period. And that, I don't want to preface this by saying Dak won't be able to continue on and do that. But that's the same insinuation everybody had before he didn't get a deal done. The whole narrative was, well, he's fine. He's going to make 31 and then he's going to make 39. You don't know that. My point for screaming, you don't know when the catastrophic injury could possibly happen and your career be jeopardized by that. And to Shefty's point, now the contract negotiations may change. It's a whole new element in that whole ball game as far as negotiating a deal with a guy that has fractured his ankle. That's a different context, a different conversation. And I look at this on Dallas onus, and look, man, do a four-year deal with the guy that you say is the franchise guy. Figure it out. And then to Dak and his team, don't sign it. This is what happens, all right? So I just felt like I had to say that, because it's always about what's going to happen, and don't worry about it. This is what happened.
You're exactly right, and they have continually said Dak Prescott is our guy, but the money and the years weren't there when it mattered most for Dak. He'll be tough to replace. Only Mahomes, Breeze, and Jackson have a higher QBR than Dak since he entered the NFL. Alex Smith showed his fighting spirit, finally returning to the field for the Redskins 2 years after a broken tibia and fibula, life-threatening infection, and 17 surgeries. His wife, Elizabeth, and kids with a standing ovation for him for his return to action. What a remarkable journey from Alex Smith. He was asked, did he believe this day was possible?
I mean, certainly was there, and I continued to reach for it and put it out there and strive for it. But no, I'd be lying if I was saying there weren't a lot of days when I didn't think it was going to happen. But, you know, you just kind of keep pushing through, you know, and I always felt like when I had my darkest moments, there was always something around the corner that happened that I just kept kind of plugging along. And all of a sudden I made a big gain or a big step or something clicked. And, you know, and then I'd kind of keep marching and, you know, and I felt like it would repeat itself. And all of a sudden, though, then I'd make another, you know, another jump.
One of the lasting images, I think, of this NFL season so far was Alex Smith's wife, Elizabeth, standing there. She said she was nauseous just watching him go back out on the field, but also cheering him on at the same time. You were in the same draft class with Alex Smith. What were you thinking when you saw him back out there?
Yeah, he was picked slightly higher than me.
just a little bit.
Just when you watch kind of the story over the years kind of unfold, and you hear Alex Smith, you know, I want to go play again just so I could give it for the challenge. And then you go, and then he says, I want to do it because I have kids and I want my kids to watch their dad say, yes, you can. For me as a parent, like that just hit me emotionally, like that he trots out onto that field and his wife is there with their kids and they're watching their dad kind of do the impossible, like do what everyone told him don't do, or you can't do, or this isn't smart to do. It's kind of one of those examples of like, you just have your own attitude and you believe in it yourself. And you're convicted by it. And to just watch Alex say he was gonna do it and then do it and get to see his family watch him kind of conquer that goal, it was incredible. It's the sports story of the year in 2020. It's the absolute sports story of the year. Comeback player of the year already. Salute Alex Smith, incredible.
Okay, so it's a great story, no doubt, but Mina, he was sacked 6 times. Should he be starting for this Redskins team?
I don't think so, and it's true, no fault of his own, but I think I speak for a lot of people when I say I was watching that, I was inspired, but the whole time I was terrified, in large part because that offensive line can't protect him. They can't protect anyone, okay? Yesterday, they only won 36% of their pass blocks, according to our charting. That was the worst in the NFL. By comparison, the Browns' offensive line won 70%. He's not safe back there right now. I don't know if anyone is. I don't think any quarterback can elevate what's in front of them. But I really don't like seeing him get sacked that way and get hit that way behind that offensive line.
Yeah, Mina's right. He deserved better. Listen, I was scared, and his wife was nauseous. I was nauseous, too, especially having to play Aaron Donald, damn it. Like, when we looked at Alex Smith run on that field, I think it humanized the game for us. Sometimes we get caught up in these players and they work out and they robotics and they strong and they supposed to do this and they fight through injury and we take it for granted. The bottom line is it humanized everything. You saw family in the stands. You saw kids that need their dad to be available, to be around, to be able to move around. You saw a wife who goes through the ebbs and flows, ups and downs, injuries, non-injuries with their husband. Everybody takes this on. And I love that depiction showed that to everybody. And then to Mina's point, on the other hand, get him the hell out of there. I know Kyle was dealing with an injury. He should not start. It should be Kyle Allen. And let Alex Smith continue to get his feet wet if the plan is for him to continue to play and go forward. But don't let him do it at the expense of this offensive line, because obviously they didn't realize Alex Smith was in the game.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting because Dwayne Haskins wasn't even at the stadium. They said he was dealing with a stomach issue. Of course, he was benched earlier in the week, moved all the way to the third quarterback on the depth chart. And then Kyle Allen, to your point, was dealing with an injury. It felt like Ron Rivera didn't have a good place to go there. He didn't feel comfortable putting Kyle Allen back in the game.
Well, listen, if you don't have a good place to go, I get that. Your hands are kind of tied. But you also can be smart with how you protect the quarterback. Like, you don't have to. Alex Smith has earned the right in this league to not be fed to the Wolves. He has earned the right in this comeback to not go, hey, you're going to go play the second half of a blowout when we don't have a chance to win this football game. I just want you to take a bunch of hits. Because here's the thing. If you're going to do that, then you darn sure better start him the next week. If I'm good enough to take the beating in week 5, coach, I'm good enough to take the beating in week 6. Right. So that's the issue that I have with that one.
And to your point, that we're saying that because Ron Rivera has said that Kyle Allen will start this next week. All right, it's time now for Big Man Ball, and I don't want to put this off any longer. Marcus, let's give some love to the big man. Let's go. Bring it to us.
Look at 96.
All right, y'all know what time it is. I caught a few big men balling this weekend, and we even stepped back in college. Look at Trey Hill coming down to recover a fumble. I don't know if he tried to do it, y'all, but he did it. Look at that thing end up in his pocket right there. I'm looking down at my screen. Don't worry about me looking at TV. The second play, we got Aleem McNeil with a pick six, baby. I'm used to that. I did that in college. The big fella getting down. And then we got the spin move by the big fella, Pagias. He's 300-pound play, quarterback in high school, if I'm not mistaken. Hits the spin move and then jumps over the fool. Like, listen, you cannot tackle me, small dude. The second thing, the New York Giants decided to take a play out of the Kansas City Chiefs playbook and throw Andrew Thomas a touchdown. Yeah, he bobbled it, but damn it, he caught it. And that's all that matters. That's a big man touchdown, baby. The big men keep balling, and I am not going to let ESPN or anybody else remove it from. And the last but not least, the oldest coach in the NFL, the came in dancing, baby. Let's call him Dancing Romeo. Romeo, where art thou, Romeo? Got the dub with the Texans for the first win this year. That's what I'm talking about, baby. Big men balling all over the place. And America, I am not going to let you unsee it.
You're the Shakespearean swagoo there. Romeo, Romeo, where art thou, Romeo? Yes. Take a bow, swagoo. Big men, we're balling and we're talking about it.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
The Falcons started 0-5 for the first time since 1997 after a loss to the Carolina Panthers, and that meant that head coach Dan Quinn and GM Thomas Dimitroff have been fired. Defensive coordinator Raheem Morris been named the interim head coach. Here's team owner Arthur Blank just a little while ago with more.
It's called lack of winning. So the problems we have to solve are all the problems that are ahead of us that keep us from winning. This is not just a response to a 0-5. It's a response to almost 3.5 years post Super Bowl. We've been playing less than 500 ball. And so when you look at that many games over a long period of time and you adjust for injuries, which every NFL team has, we just haven't performed to the level that we're capable of.
You know, the Falcons just haven't been the same team after losing in Super Bowl 51. They have a losing record and the only one playoff appearance in the 3+ seasons since. And while their offense has continued to be one of the best in the league, their defense ranks 30th in efficiency over that span, better only than the Dolphins and the Raiders. Adam Schefter joins us from the Domino's pregame headquarters. Adam, give us the latest around the league, starting with Michael Thomas's status heading into tonight's Monday Night Football matchup.
Laura, the Saints have ruled him out tonight, but it's not related to the high ankle sprain that he suffered in the opener. It's related to a fight that he had during practice this weekend with a teammate, C.J. Gardner-Johnson, for punching that particular teammate, for being combative. And the Saints felt like it was important to send a message to one of their best players that he is not bigger than the team. He is out for tonight's game. The Chargers are waiting to make a couple of decisions on Mike Williams and Joey Bosa. Mike Williams will warm up pregame. He practiced some this week. I think they believe that he should be out there. They want to see him pregame. Joey Bosa sounds like he could be down tonight. The Chargers just activated a defensive end from their practice squad. And Dalvin Cook suffered a groin injury on Sunday night. Keep in mind, the Vikings play the Atlanta Falcons this week in what will be the first game for interim head coach Raheem Morris, and then have a bye. So if they sit Cook this upcoming week, he would have 2 weeks to heal the groin injury that he suffered last night. Again, he's being examined by doctors. We'll see how severe the injury turns out to be, but it would not be a surprise if Cook didn't play this weekend. The COVID tests in New England and Tennessee came back clean this morning. That's a good sign for tomorrow night's Titans-Bills game and a good sign for this upcoming weekend's Patriots-Broncos game. But as Bill Belichick said over the weekend, Laura, we live day by day and hour by hour.
Yeah, Shefty, it's almost like second by second at this point. Hey, we will see you tonight on Monday Night Countdown right here on ESPN. 6 p.m. is when that thing starts. So Shefty live from New York with the rest of the crew there. How about some Sunday night action? Minnesota taking on Seattle. And Russell Wilson entered Sunday night's game against the Vikings with 33 career game-winning drives in the fourth quarter or overtime. That's the most by any quarterback since he entered the league in 2012. Number 34 was crazy, and Pete Carroll was hype.
Can you win the game in the first quarter?
No!
Can you win the game in the second quarter?
No!
Can you win the game in the third quarter?
No!
Can you win the game in the fourth quarter?
Yeah.
Carroll really 69 years old? Anyway, we're going to get to that, but we got something else to get to here. Mina, a huge part of this on the Vikings side of things was with the 26-21 lead and at the two-minute warning, Mike Zimmer kept his offense on the field, the fourth and one play from Seattle's six-yard line, instead of kicking a chip shot field goal. Dalvin Cook, of course, had the groin injury, so he's not available, but it doesn't work. Is that the right call?
Yes, it was the right call. Just had a bad result. Here's what drives me crazy. Whenever a team goes for it and they convert, the next day everyone praises them for their aggression. I think about the Seahawks playing the Rams in 2018. Jared Goff kept the ball, fourth down, converted. Genius move, Sean McVay. When they don't convert, people blame the analytics, and we nerds are stuffed into our proverbial lockers, even though it was the right football decision. By the way, our own model said, from an analytics perspective, it was basically a wash. But all game long, Laura, this Vikings offensive line had been killing Seattle up front, not just Dalvin Cook. Alexander Mattison right there had been averaging over 5 yards a carry. It was the right decision, it just didn't have the right execution. If you can keep Russell Wilson off the field and win the game, you do it. And if they had done it, everybody would have been praising them today.
Yeah, fun fact about me, I actually used to get stuffed in lockers in high school, so that was fun. But very good points on the analytics
call
there.
Call him a shot.
I know, big surprise. Go ahead, Marcus.
D.O., that's phenomenal, man. Listen, people, you may be looking at Megatron 2.0 with DK Metcalf. I want to make an important point about what Seattle is doing. Guys, y'all remember early in the season last year we talked about Kansas City's defense and what they weren't capable of doing, and you start to see them make plays in opportunistic times. Isn't that a little bit of what we're seeing the Seattle Seahawks do right now? K.J. Wright with the one-hand interception. Mm-hmm. Russell Wilson getting the ball, and everybody's terrified and devastated. And listen, if I'm on that sideline, hell yeah, you go for the fourth and one, Mike Zimmer, because if I'm a defensive player on that sideline, even though I have all the pride in the world and know that they have to go 94 yards, I know damn well I don't want Russell Wilson to get the ball back, because nine times out of ten, we're going to lose the game. That's being a realist. That ain't letting pride take over. So it was the correct call. But you see Russell Wilson doing a lot of what Patrick Mahomes did last year. And this was my Super Bowl pick. And I got caught up on Tampa, and I'm still caught up on Tampa because they're a little bit more complete. But Seattle is starting to make these opportunistic plays on defense and getting the ball to the side where they are dominant offensively. Damn, Seattle. Step that D up. Y'all might be winning the Super Bowl.
Hey, you know what's interesting, too? When you look back at teams that win championships, a lot of times they can win those close games. Seattle's been doing that. They have 15 wins in one possession game since the start of last year.
Really?
That's five more than any team. And time to bring in Lisa Salters from New Orleans. Lisa, the Chargers made a hard choice at the quarterback position this week that left one rookie excited, one veteran disappointed. What did Coach Anthony Lynn say went into that decision?
Well, our Chargers head coach Anthony Lynn told us he likes to make a decision and then let everyone know about it right away so that his team can have clarity. But he said demoting Tyrod Taylor this week and naming rookie Justin Herbert as his starter for the rest of this season was one of the most difficult decisions he's ever had to make. Lynn said, knowing the kind of player that Tyrod Taylor is, the kind of respect that he has throughout the locker room, and knowing that he was sidelined because a team doctor punctured Taylor's lung, trying to give him a painkilling injection so that he could play through cracked ribs. All of that, Lynn said, made it a difficult conversation to have with Taylor. But ultimately, Lynn told us, the Chargers selected Herbert sixth overall for a reason, to be the franchise quarterback. And while the team would have preferred to have Herbert watch and learn behind Taylor this season, that's just not how it played out. According to the team, Taylor did not make the trip here to New Orleans because he's not 100% healthy yet. Herbert will be making his fourth career start tonight, and he's already played against Patrick Mahomes, Tom Brady, tonight Drew Brees. That's a crash course in quarterbacking.
Laura? That definitely is. Lisa, we will see you soon on the sidelines for Monday Night Football. Time to pick the game tonight. Marcus, you first. Chargers or Saints?
I'm taking the Los Angeles Chargers. 28-21, I think I said.
No, 28-24.
Something like that. Close game.
Legend.
28-24. Close game. Close game. But look, naming Justin Herbert the starter, I think, is going to give this team a boost. Sometimes that plays in the psychological. And the Saints are giving up 30 points a game. They're the worst defense in the red zone. And when you're talking about playing against an athletic quarterback and the way he's been spending it, and Keenan Allen and Hunter Henry and those guys stepping up, I'm looking for the Chargers to finally have their night.
I love it when you can feel Marcus talking himself into the pick it goes along. Just naming guys. I got the Saints. I'm playing it safer here, in part because of what you heard earlier about Joey Bosa being questionable. That's concerning. Now, Michael Thomas not playing also hurts, but what we saw last week from Drew Brees was impressive. I have been hard on him. He doesn't need to throw it deep. He just needs to be accurate, short, and intermediate. He was last week. If he can keep that up, this offense should be fine.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Saints 30-24. They need to slow down Hunter Henry a little bit. They're the worst defense in football when it comes to stopping, covering, trying to defend tight ends. So that concerns me a little bit. But I think Kamara's got 10 catches this game, probably more. He'll have a big night. And I think the Saints offense is much better, in a much better place than people think or give them credit for. The Saints will win, but it'll be a good football game.
I'm saying Saints 31-27, and I think it's also going to be a great game, as you can tell by my score prediction there. I'm putting this squarely on Drew Brees' shoulders, so come on, Drew, show me something tonight. I think he's going to be great, and he always is great on Monday Night Football. Also, how about this, guys? The Chargers, one of two teams Brees has never lost to. The other, the Saints. So, there you go.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Hey, some people really thought this Chiefs team could go undefeated this year en route to another Super Bowl. The Raiders had something else to say about that. Don't look now, but Derek Carr outplayed Patrick Mahomes, who had his first interception of the season. And this is kind of wild. The Chiefs lost by 8 points. That's actually the largest margin of deficit in Mahomes' career, or margin of defeat, either way, whatever. The Chiefs' 13-game win streak has been snapped in the process, their first loss in 336 days. It was tied for the second longest win streak by any team in the last decade with the Packers' run when they started 13-0 in 2011, of course, and a couple of Patriots streaks. The only longer win streak over that span, the Panthers, who started 14-0 in 2015. Of course, Cam Newton, a big part of that. New on NFL Live from our own Adam Schefter, Chiefs wide receiver Sammy Watkins expected to miss time, possibly a couple weeks, with a hamstring injury the doctors still are evaluating, per a source. The Chiefs, of course, scheduled to play at Buffalo, tough one there, and then at Denver in the next 2 weeks. Got to deal with the altitude, of course, there as well. So, Dan, when you watch this Chiefs offense and when you watch Patrick Mahomes, you kind of look around and say, okay, well, who's really to blame for some of their struggles? They're not looking exactly how they can. Who is to blame? Is this on Patrick Mahomes?
Oh, part of it is on Patrick. As great as he is, part of this is on Patrick Mahomes. And I would zero it down to one thing, his drifting in the pocket. What I mean by that is his offensive line will set a pocket, and then all of a sudden, he'll just start to drift, sometimes away from pressure, sometimes into pressure. This is really challenging for an offensive line to have to handle because you don't necessarily know where the spot is. Now, listen, I'm not trying to make a massive deal out of this stuff. This what is part of what makes him great. But you see that spin around by Crosby? Like you could just climb that pocket right there instead of running away from it. Again, drift all the way back. Now you're running around. Like, this is a lot for this offensive line to have to deal with. And the reason that Patrick is doing this so much is because they're really bad on first down. You see another pocket that's good. Okay, now scrambling around. This is how you're going to create bad plays for your offense and bad plays for yourself as an individual. And I'll go back to the point. They're bad on first down right now. Yesterday, they averaged 2 yards on first down. So then what does that lead to? Third and tens. Their average third down was, their average third down distance was third and 10. This kid's amazing. He's the best player I've ever seen at the position. But eventually, you live by the three, you die by the three. And if the team's going to pack the paint and the threes don't go down, you're going to struggle on offense. So it's a little bit of Patrick, and he was great against Baltimore. Sitting in the pocket, he owned that space. He wasn't very good yesterday. And then the offensive line wasn't as good as they were, or usually are. But this is a little bit of their offense, but I think Patrick can be better in that pocket.
Okay, well, we're not going to be on this show those people that just only talk about the team that lost just because they're a big-name team. How about this Raiders offense, Mina, because they deserve a ton of credit.
Yes, they do. And watching them, watching Derek Carr have an incredible game, outplay Patrick Mahomes, I was thinking about the draft, Laura, because when the Raiders took Henry Ruggs, I thought this could go one of two ways. One way is that it's a total waste because Derek Carr is not going to throw the ball to him downfield. His speed will not be used by this offense. The other path, the one we saw yesterday, was that it unlocked something in Derek Carr. He has a beautiful deep ball. He just hasn't had the willingness to throw it deep. And you saw that willingness yesterday. Three completions over 35 yards. He had gone 22 games without a pass that deep. And it also has an incredible effect on the rest of the offense. I called gravity, Dan, to use your time about basketball. It's like Steph Curry, the pull that he has on defenders because it opens up that underneath space. And who do they have there? Darren Waller. The combination of Waller and Ruggs is deadly. And if Carr keeps airing it out, this is a top five offense.
Hey, y'all hear me? Is this thing on?
It's on.
Is this on? Here everybody hear me?
Here we go. Yep.
Rush four. Rush four. Put people in coverage. Make Patrick Mahomes and this Kansas City Chiefs offense have patience. They want you to pressure them. He invites the pressure. He thrives in the pressure. He's a better quarterback in his career facing pressure than teams that decide that they will rush with four and drop seven in coverage. You can mix it up. You can have your three plays. This is what makes Dan Orlovsky so great. Dan sent me a note after that game. I think they rushed him. They pressured him with more than four three times, right, Dan?
Yes.
He was three for 95 yards. That is success against the blitz. Stop doing it. If y'all don't want me to lose my mind, stop doing it. Do what the Raiders did.
Yeah, you've been telling them, and we do want you to lose your mind. But anyway, it's only time for one more thing before we go. Guys, I'm going to start today because Baker Mayfield is dealing with a rib injury, so some wondering, could he play Sunday against the Steelers? Well, when he was asked about it, he said, Mama didn't raise no wuss.
Get him back.
Let me just say, this sounded to me like Baker Mayfield from like last year and kind of like the year before that, when then he was like, hey, I can't be talking so much. Kind of sounds like Baker's winning a few games and he's like, ooh, I'm right back into this thing and I'm going to talk.
Get him, Baker. Now listen, the Falcons moved on from their general manager and their coach. I think this is a good job. Two reasons why. First of all, if you continue to lose, you're going to have a top five pick. There's three bona fide stars coming out in this draft at the quarterback position. Let's say you don't have a top five pick. You still got Matt Ryan, Julio Jones, Calvin Ridley, Deion Jones. This is still a roster with some talent on it. It's a good job in Atlanta.
We can't go this whole show without talking about Chase Claypool. Four touchdowns. What do they put in the water in Pittsburgh to find these wide receivers, man? Ben isn't airing it out. Doesn't matter. These guys are getting yards after the catch. You see that here. Dominant from the rook.
And how could we not say this in the show? LeBron James, world champion. I'm going to go to Cleveland and win one. I'm going to go to Miami and win a few. I'm going to come to L.A. and bet on the promise, and I'm going to win one. I'm going to bring AD there. LeBron James is a world champion again. The GOAT, LBJ.
Let's go. Hey, from one GOAT to another, check out what Tom Brady tweeted last night. Congrats, my brother King James, on winning his fourth championship. Not bad for a washed-up old guy. And he's making fun of himself, putting the little four up because, you know, he didn't know what down it was. It's okay, Tom. It happens to the best of us. Marcus, what were you doing last night when the Lakers won? You were probably pretty excited.
Going crazy. Put me in a bubble. Let's put me in the new Space Jam. Put me in it damn well. I'm going to be a champion. King James.